morning. Sister Gamora, Rabbi Eliezer was Cholosh, Gamora writes. This is on Hayam Beis, Brachas. So Rabbi Eliezer was Cholosh. Cholosh literally means sick, you know, I mean weak. But in Aramaic it means sick. He's sick. And Rabbi Yochanan came to visit him. We spoke once about the mitzvah Bikur Cholim, that more in Dorm tells a story about Rabbi Akiva, who once there was a Talmud in his yeshiva who was sick, and nobody went to visit him. Akiva went, and after he went to visit him, so the Talmud came back to him and he said, Rabbi, he's telling you, know, he said, the only reason that I lived was because of you. Rabbi Akiva was so amazed by this that, you know, what did he do? He's not a doctor. He just went to visit him. He realized the power of Bikur Cholim. So he went and called the whole yeshiva in. And he, you know, told them, darshans, that any person who is not mevaker chole is kilu shofech domim. Right? He gave a shmuz to the yeshiva. Any person, well, sick. And, you don't go to visit him. You just leave him in the hands of doctors. You know, and you don't go and visit him. And
then the or person, Teba, quote unquote, yeah, or Teba. Well on his own.
Right, and the person doesn't recover. So it's considered as if you killed him. Yeah, even though, I mean, he had an illness and there were doctors taking care of him, but you could have visited him. The Bikur itself, the Geber of Bikur Nefesh. So he wrote. Anyway, so we have another story over here. It goes into this a little bit about Rabbi Yochanan. It's the end of the section about Yisurim over here. So it says that he went to visit Rabbi Eliezer, was Cholosh, he was weak, and all the Gabei Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan came to visit him, and Chazan, he saw that Kogoni Bebeis Ofal. He saw that he was there lying in bed in a dark room. Now, you know, the question comes up, you know, why was he lying in a dark room? Why didn't he turn on the lights? We're speaking about a Gemara where Rav Elazar was Cholosh, was weak, and Rav Yochanan was coming to visit him. And he saw that Rav Elazar was lying in a dark room, so he said, why didn't he turn on the light? The answer is that they didn't have lights to turn on in those days. he had to take oil and pour them into a lamp, right. Get a match, you know, and what kind of matches they had either, for that matter, you know what I'm saying. And, you know, light and oil, it took a lot of effort. And there's a cloud that people who are sick don't have time, they don't have energy to take care of their needs properly. You know, if you're sick, who has koach to go start getting up on a ladder and pouring oil on the thing, whatever they had, you know. Or we'll see later, it's very possible that there was no oil in the house at all because the guy didn't have any money to buy oil. And if you're sick, you don't work. And he's lying there in the dark in the house. Now they say that one of the mitzvahs of Bikur Cholim, you remember we spoke about this, is to take care of the physical needs of the person. And often the physical needs of the person, as they say, are great. Besides the fact that often they don't have, as they say, they're not working, they have tremendous financial needs. But besides that, as I said, even simple things like turning on a light become a tremendous effort. There's a cloud that people who are sick, talking is a tremendous effort. It's extremely tiring to talk. If you've ever been sick or visited people who are sick, It's extremely tiring to talk. It's very hard. It takes a lot of effort. So often, that's another thing, if you come and talk too much, you wear the person out. Because often they feel like they have to entertain you, you know. They have to know, they don't have any car. And anyway, we said that you have to go and take care of the needs, you see what they need. And here, you know, he's lying in the dark, he didn't have any light, he said, didn't have any oil. I always say, I remember when I went to visit my father once, he was in the hospital, and I remember he didn't have any glasses. So I said, what happened to your glasses, you know, your eyeglasses? So he said, he broke them, he sat on them and he broke them. Just like what happens to sick people, you know what I mean? You're like so coordinated, you fall in your bed. And so I was thinking at the time that had I not gone and visited him, you know, who's going to get him a new pair of glasses? Like, no doctor is going to run and get this guy a new pair of glasses. Not to mention, you know, who's going to pay his bills in the house, you know, who's going to take care of what, you know, all sorts of things that are going, you know, people are worrying about. And, you know, for a sick person to be stuck in a hospital without glasses, unable to see, unable to read, can have a major effect on the whole person's recovery. It's not simple. You know, you can't rely on doctors for sure, especially here. The doctors come in once a day, if that. Half the time, they don't even know what's going on with the patient. They feel dependent on nurses to try to tell, really? Ask them what's happening. They read a chart, and who knows the charts are written. So you do it. You go and sit by a person sick all day. You realize you do half the time you're directing, you know, making sure they get all the information straight and the medications are going properly. And what do they see? That's what it is. That's how it functions. You know, you leave people. What's that?
Socializing medicine. Yeah.
You leave people in the hands of, you know, leave people in the hands of doctors. You're in trouble. And I always say you're in your berachas hagomel to get out of a hospital. You know, you're stuck there and you can't get out. You're in the hands of these doctors, and sometimes you're long, they're sick, and they start talking with each other in front of them what they should do. What do you think we should do with him? You know, should we, you know, cut him open? You know, maybe we should operate. Maybe they don't even explain to the patient, you know, what's going on. It's not like, you know, it's a different bedside manner here. You know, you know, in America they have to feel like they have to pamper you more and explain to you what's happening. You know, here it's more of an army, you know, mentality. What do you think we should do to him? You know, should we operate? Maybe we shouldn't operate. Maybe he needs this. All right, goodbye. You know, they don't even, you know, person goes, you know, they didn't say hello to the person who's there. It feels like he's some sort of guinea pig, you know, to these medical people. Especially if you're in a teaching hospital. Then you get the students that come in and they start, like, you know, picking up the sheets and start looking at the thing. See this over him? Yeah, yeah. And they really, and then they go. You realize what it's like. It's the most degrading thing, you know. It's terrible. Anyway, so that's the kalam. So here he is lying in the dark. You know, that's the first thing. That, you know, why you can't leave people in the dark, because you have to visit them. And, you know, take care, make sure their needs, that even their physical needs, eating properly, doing other things, taking care of simple things, to make a big difference. What do they like to eat? You know, they're getting food that they hate to eat. Make, you know, all sorts of things make difference. Not to mention kashrus and things like that. Anyway, so he sees that Boaz is lying in the dark. And Rabbi Yochanan, there's no way to turn on the light, no oil. And Rabbi Yochanan, however, didn't need much oil, Mura says. And that Rabbi Yochanan just pulled back his sleeve on his arm. And he lit up the room with his arm beneath his sleeve, you know. Just, you know, and the room lit up, you know. Now, Rabbi Yochanan, to give a bit of background for this Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan was famous for his beauty. He was, you know, Yidua, Rabbi Yochanan. There's many, many Gemaras about Rabbi Yochanan's beauty. He was one of the most beautiful human beings, you know, in the world. He used to sit, you know, outside the mikveh, you know, and women used to come to look at him. They should have, you know, a kavanah that their children should look like Rabbi Yochanan. So they write. They just sit there, you know, just his mom's beauty. It was like a spiritual dugma. And they say, you know, Rish Lakish, you know, jumped across the river. He was a robber, and he jumped across the river because he thought Rabbi Yochanan was a woman, which shows you a little bit what he must have looked like, you know, sort of in Jerusalem or something. And he jumps across the river and he sees Rabbi Yochanan. Ah! He's upset. He says, what a waste, you know. If your beauty, you know, what you could do with your beauty in this world, and you're wasting it in the base medrash. Could have been ugly to be in the base medrash. Really beautiful for you. You know, I still haven't solved my question about Rabbi Yishuv ben Hanani, who was famous for his ugliness.
Right,
you know, he was famous for his ugliness. Right. And the Roman Caesar's daughter asked him, why are you so ugly? And he said, you know, he told her, you know, to go take your father's wine and store it in a silver cup, you know, silver thing, and she did it and it went bad. So he told her, you know, he told her, look, you see, he says, it's my ugliness that, you know, it preserves my wisdom. So she said there are a lot of chachamim who are wise, yeah, they're not ugly like you. So I said, if they're ugly like me, they'd be even more wise. So anyway, you see this opinion that ugliness preserves. But Rav Yochanan over here, you see that with Rav Yochanan, who was the great sage of the thing, you know, you see that. There's a certain Indian of the beauty of Rav Yochanan, you know, the Stavka, it's a different, you know, you could say that he would be even beautiful, more beautiful, but you see, it's probably different, I don't know, like that, that's my own question. Could I, different Nakuda values, but whatever, the Gemara says that, so he saw Rav Yochanan, and he jumped across the room, what a waste, you know, with your beauty, what are you doing? Keep learning Torah all day, you know. You could do more things in your beauty. You could be a model. I don't know. You could do it. Show yourself on magazines. You know. You could do it with your beauty. So Rav Yochanan says back to Rav Shlakish, you know, what a waste. You know, with your strength, you can jump across a river like that. You know, and you're wasting your strength, robbing and stealing. Why? If you took your strength and used it in Torah, you could light up the world. You know, such a waste of strength. You should use your physical strength like that for stealing and not for Torah. So, Rish Lakish wanted to jump back across the river, you know, and he didn't have any koch to get back. He couldn't get back to the other side.
Rish Lakish
was a cruel, yeah. And he was a famous. They always say Rish Lakish and Rav Yochanan are like the prototypes of two different peoples in tzaddikim in this world. There's certain people who are born tzaddikim, you know, Ishtam, Yoshev, Ohalim, you know. And there are certain people who are born like with powerful, you know, taivas and desires and urges. They're not born tzaddikim at all. And life is a process of function. If they, you know, if they use that for tov, they become great also. But it's a different type of path in life, you know, path of the Baal Tshuva, David HaMelech, as opposed to David HaMelech was like that, you know, complexion of Esau, Yofei 9, as opposed to like these born tzaddikim who are like from Rechem Kodesh, Rechem, you know, making brachas when they're still nursing. You know what I mean? It's these types of stories that they say. You know. So anyway, but that was just lucky. So they said he couldn't get back to the other side. Kitzur, yeah, I always say, so we all, you know, I always say that, you know, once you see somebody like Rav Yochanan, once you see the beauty of Rav Yochanan, you know, you don't have any koach to go back to stealing again. You just can't do it. You can't put all of your koach. Once you have that exposure, it was enough already to, you know, he didn't have the strength. He wanted to get away, but he couldn't put his whole heart into it anymore. He couldn't get back. So Rav Yochanan said, come and learn. Maybe I'll give you my sister as a wife, whatever, you know. The Lola Shema over there. He stayed, and we know Rav Shlakish became the great Havrusa, Rav Yochanan, you know. When he died, Rav Yochanan wanted to die as well. Couldn't live anymore. So his koach, he gave another Havrusa. And everything Rav Yochanan said, he gave him 20 reasons why he was right. And Rav Yochanan started crying. He said, what do you think? I need 20 reasons why I'm right? I know I was right without you. What do I need you for? He goes, when I had Rish Lakish here, everything I said, he gave me 20 reasons why I was wrong. Every single thing I said. So what about this? What about this? What about, I can imagine his koach. And that's the type of person. What about that? And they started fighting back and forth. He goes, now, where's Rish Lakish? What do I have left? And so people who tell me I'm right. Chavrusa.
Wow.
Died. Oy Chavrusa, oy Misus. He couldn't live anymore.
Give me liberty or give me death.
So anyway, that was Rav Yochanan. So he was known for his beauty. The Gemara says that he had a Talmud of Rav Abohu. And his Talmud Rav Abohu is a student of Yochanan. So when he used to go to Caesarea to visit the Caesar, so the maid who lived in the Caesar's house used to call him the man of the shining face, Botsina Dinahira. His face lit up. She couldn't get over his shining face. This is considered to be like the lowest person in Caesar's house. You get one look at Rav Abohu and like he's a beauty. It's like his face lit up that room there. And the Gemara writes that if you saw Rav Abohu, so you get a remez, a hint, you know, Rav Yochanan, you know, must have looked like it. You know, somebody who saw Rav Yochanan, you get a remez to the beauty of Yaakov Avinu. You imagine Yaakov is this incredibly beautiful human being. You know? So somebody who saw Yaakov Avinu, you get a remez to the beauty of Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon, yeah. Somebody saw Adam HaRishon, got a hint to the beauty of a Kodesh Baruch Hu himself. That's what the Gemara writes. So you get a feeling over here. It's like beauty is a, it's not a physical beauty, you know, that has to do with time, you know, or even with symmetrical figures. It's a beauty of the soul, like lighting up the face, you know, little, like Moshe Rabbeinu when his neshama came into his body. So you know, his face is like a light bulb, you know, walking around with his veil. You know, he sits down. I always say, imagine Moshe Rabbeinu's shir. He comes into the room with his big veil, you know, opens his gemara, you know, whatever, you know, pulls back his veil, and, you know. But he's sitting there looking at this light bulb, you know, like lighting up, the sun shining on the, you know. And then he starts talking, this voice behind this light. Such a shir, you know what I mean? Trying to grasp what he's trying to say. That's Mamash Torah Misinai, you know what I mean? Anyway. So Rabbi Yochanan had that koach, and we'll see the beauty light up the world like that. So he takes back his arm as his sleeve, and he sees that Rabbi Lozer, he looks at him, and he sees that Rabbi Lozer is crying. He's lying in the dark, and he's crying. I mean, I have a kasha over here, which is, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan's face light up the room? Like, why Dafka underneath his sleeve? It's not a kasha, because usually they talk about hadras funny.
Didn't he have the eyebrow?
His eyebrows?
Who's about the eyebrow that covered his face?
No, his eyelids, because he was fat. And then he had a gold rod. He used to use a gold rod to hold up his eyes. Rabbi Yochanan, he had a famous gold stick. He was very, it says when he got older, he was quite fat. And he came in and he used to have his gold, this flaps of skin would cover, it was hard to see. He used to hold him up with a gold rod.
Wow.
Anyway, I like that card. Who are you? Yeah. You know, and then pick up the gold rod and stare at you.
That's Rabbi Yochanan. That's
Rabbi Yochanan. A lot of things we'll see. Rabbi Yochanan is a powerful personality. A lot of interesting things about him. Anyway, so he looks at Rabbi Lazaro now in the light, and he sees that he's lying there crying. So he says to him, you know, why are you crying? And we say that this is the second nekuda here about Bikur Cholim, that besides taking care of one's physical needs and turning on the light if they need it, there's a different nekuda as well in Bikur Cholim, and that's you try to comfort the person and take care of his emotional needs. Sick people have very powerful emotional needs. It's extremely difficult in the society to be sick. Many times you suffer from depression, you suffer, you know, especially if the person is really seriously sick and life is in danger. It, you know, it's requires, what they say, therapy. You know, I mean, no, really, it requires a lot of sensitivity, and it's difficult to talk to a person and try to help them deal with all sorts of issues that come up in a situation. Imagine a person thinks he's going to die, you know. Imagine what goes through the person's mind. You come and visit them, and they're getting depressed, you know. And you just, it's, you know, you talk to a person, you walk into a room, and the person's sick, and he's crying. So, you know, mitzvah, speak to him, talk to him, what's happening, and what are you thinking about, what are you feeling, let's just talk it over, comfort him. That's part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So Yochanan, he begins, you know, most people, it's a whole theory as well, you know, people, especially who are in hospitals and are sick, and you know, people started dealing with that, but you know, it's well known that when people, especially in your hospitals, right, if here he's lying by himself in the dark, you feel helpless, you feel out of control, you feel, you know, and it's mashpia on the person's mood. And we know that when a person, when a person gets sick and depressed, and so the immunization system gets depressed as well, and people get sick, you know, people who are seriously ill have a much, much higher chance of catching a serious illness. And people who don't, it's studies. Isn't that right? I saw studies like that, and it's not simple. And certainly, koach to recover is very totally. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan, he starts trying to comfort him. You know, find out what's happening. So he says, "What are you crying about? Amai kopochis? What are you crying?" So he says to him, "Maybe you're crying. Are you crying because of?" He's maybe crying because of Torah that you didn't learn. Now, Rabbi Lazar, apparently, great as he was in Torah, but in life, as I say, when you're young, you have she'ifas, you have desires of what you're going to do in this world, how you're going to learn, especially somebody who wants to learn Torah, become great in Torah, you know. You're going to learn all of Shas, you're going to learn all of Poskim, you know. You know, I'm going to do all of this thing. I remember when I was young, you know, your age, I remember I had a teacher, and he was a very big Talmud Chacham. So somebody said to me that at the time when I was young, he said, well, you know, he sat and learned in Kollel, you know, 10, 12 years, you know. So I remember thinking at the time, wow, 12 years. If I sit, you know, and learn in Kollel 12 years, I'll be bigger than him. You know, I'll be able to even know more. And I'll be able to come back, you know. Here I am 20 years later, and I still don't come up to this person's ankle. Like, you know, I mean, so I, like, 20, what happened, you know, somehow or other, you know, 20 years go by, and I'm never going to make it. I'm just not going to know Shas backwards and forwards about that. I'm just not going to do it. Years ago, why not? I still can store it. Why not? You know, yada, yada. But you get older and you realize sometimes that for various reasons, you don't have the kochos nefesh, you don't have the time, you don't have the power. You know, life keeps you back and you have things that you really wanted to do, you know. Great Nigla, great Nister, I'm going to be a Mekubal, I'm going to make Golem, I don't know, you know, all sorts of things that you want to do with your life. You're going to be so great for it. And then you reach a certain age and you realize you're just not going to do it. I'm never going to become a posek. I'm just not going to become a great posek. I'm already my age. You know, I'm just not going to do it. Now I don't have time. I'm caught teaching girls for Parnassa half the day. You know what I mean? I'm never going to become a great posek for sure. Nobody's going to ask me shilas. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, when I was young, I could do it. Why not? You know what I mean? So that could, after a while, and especially if a person realizes, especially when you get sick. So that's something that that's enough to get a person down. You know what I'm saying? It's enough to deal with, like, you know, they call that midlife crisis, you know what I mean? You reach a certain age where your beard starts turning all gray, you know, all of a sudden you get like, you know, where am I, what am I doing, you know? Then you start, you know, you start dealing with what we call acceptance in life, you know, that you have a samech b'chelko, becomes powerful, you know, tool as you grow older. Sameach with my chelik and chayim, you know, whatever that is. But you do that when you're young also, but young you fool yourself more because you still feel like I can be anybody, which is not true. You can't be anybody. You can only be who you are. You don't have choices to be the Vilna Gaon. But when you're young, I can be the Vilna Gaon. I can be the Kiyager. I'm going to take my choice, you know. That's true, but it's not true. But you don't know it. But when you get old, you don't really have to deal with Sameach v'chelko, you know what I mean? And it works in all sorts of areas, you know. Even by Kodesh Baruch Hu, Sameach v'chelko. They say by children also. Children are also Sameach v'chelko. You start the same thing. So what do you do? So then you feel like, I'm not going to be Rabbi Akiva Eger, but my children are going to be. And you start with them. And then you have these kids, and when they're 2 years old, you bring them to Cheder. They're going to make it. My kid's going to be this Gadol Hador. He's going to do this. Then they grow up and they become teenagers, you know, and you're like, they go through all their things. And then, I may, you know, you're lucky if you get them to David on Shabbos. And you start saying, you know, what happened to them, you know. But they're also not going to be Rabbi Akiva Eger, and they're going to go, you know. You have to be Sameach v'chelko with your children also, you know. It's called growing old. So anyway, Rav Yochanan sees this person and he says, it's chayiv b'emes, we're unrealistic. And Dimyon grabs us away from reality, you know. We live in, you can only confront reality, you know, deal with it. So he says, listen to what Rav Yochanan answers. He says, you're upset because you haven't learned more Torah. So Rav Yochanan says to him, let me tell you something. He says in Chazal, he says, whether you learn a lot or whether you learn a little, doesn't make any difference. So you're not the Vilna Gaon. It doesn't make any difference. You're not going to become learn on Kol HaTorah Kula. He says, was your heart in your lifetime l'shamayim? Your machaving libo l'shamayim? Okay, no. You lived your life and you did what you can in your madrega to serve Hashem. So you did what Hashem wanted of you, and you're Gan Eden and you're Olam Habo. You know, you're a tzaddik. You've done what you could. You fulfilled your chelik. I say, I would give you, you know, this Maharal. I think I told it already once. This is beautiful Maharal. He talks about why is Olam Habo always considered in the image of a circle. Olam Habo is a tzaddikim dancing around. Kadosh Baruch Hu is in the middle. Zel and Kain and Zel Kivino Laoshim. Yeah, mochol, it's a tzaddikim b'olam habo. So you can be dancing in a circle. So he goes into this a little bit. And Hashem is going to be in the middle. They're going to be pointing at Hashem in the middle. Zalokeinu kivinu lo. This is the God we're waiting for. He said. So he's brought, you know, this image of why Olam Haba is an image of tzaddikim dancing around in a circle around Hashem. So he makes this point that Olam Hazeh, it's a world, it's a linear world. It's the image of Olam Hazeh is a line. And in a line, you know, this way, so to speak, yeah, we define ourselves and our success in terms of who's ahead of us and who's behind us. Ooh. And we define ahead and behind in quantitative ways. That's Olam Hazeh. Everything's defined in quantity. Yeah, when you meet another person, they found that men do this more than women. When men meet each other, they always try to size each other up, you know. Is he better than me or is he worse than me? You know, how big is he? Is he smarter than me or is he stupider than me? Does he know more Torah? Does he know less? Is he richer or is he smarter? You know, how much does he make? You know, what does he do? What car does he have? He has a Mercedes, you know, I have a Volkswagen, you know, I'm less than him. But this person has some sort of jalopy, I'm better than him, you know what I mean? And so it goes, and we size each other up, you know. It's in the world of accomplishment, and we define accomplishment by amounts. Amounts of things, how smart, how wise, even sitkas, how many mitzvahs do I do, how many chumras do I do, you know what I mean? We define everything in terms of amount. And so we're always measuring some. So he says, if you take it a circle, you know, a circle is, you know, around. So if you look at the person ahead of you in the circle, and somebody behind you in the circle, right on that one little thought, and say, look, he's ahead of me, and he's behind me, you know, I'm better than him, and that's always because you're just looking at the person ahead of you and behind you. However, if you look at Hashem in the middle, you'll realize you're all equidistant from the center. There's no such thing as ahead and behind. Quantity makes no difference. Person in life, you know, every person can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, not a chacham, but, you know, you're being oyved Hashem with what you have, and your head is there. So, melee, you're equal with everyone else. And it doesn't make any difference anymore that you weren't as smart. It just makes no difference. And you're of equal value. But that's an Olam Habodika way of looking at life. You know, it's not Olam Hazeh where we're always success and failures, you know. And, you know what I've seen in my image?
She describes who
Maharal says this. And so it is, you know, Echad Amarbe, Echad Amarbe. It doesn't make any difference whether you did a lot or a little. So you didn't accomplish. A person wanted to learn. You couldn't have learned. You didn't have koach to learn. You didn't have the money to learn. You didn't have the talents to. You wanted to learn. Whatever you wanted to do, you did it. And you're equidistant to Hashem. You know, it's a. You don't have to cry. Now, that some of the questions you learn here as well, that in life, if a person wants to do something, and then life experience doesn't allow him to do it, in Olam Haba, he gets what he wanted to do. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, didn't allow him to finish it off because of life's circumstances. But he wanted to do such a thing, so his schar will be, you know. Olam Haba, as I say, we don't judge necessarily what success and failure is in this world. It's a different thing. Anyway, you get the idea of Yochanan. He says to Rav Elazar, that's it, go ahead.
Yeah, but sometimes, I mean, like people have like dreams and goals or whatever, or things that they want to do, and then they keep trying, and then they don't, you know, life circumstances, like you said, keeps them from getting it. But then they kind of lose interest in it altogether. So they know they cannot get it, so they lose interest, and then they'll go into other things.
Well, it depends what you're doing. If it's, you know, if you're a mitzvah that you're trying to do, so even if you're not successful in doing it, but you believe, sometimes in life, if you believe what you're doing is right, you continue doing it, even if you're unsuccessful. You know what I'm saying? You don't go through it. Sometimes, yeah, you know, you have a lot of nisyonot and all of them, but you feel like it's the right thing to do, so you continue on that path. You don't stop, you know. You want to go to Eretz Yisrael, right? You don't stop because you catch a red light on the way. You know what I'm saying? You stop and then you wait and you finish and the car breaks down and you get a flat tire. You continue. You feel like this is what needs to be done. You continue. If in the end you don't get there, so all right, what can I do? Kosh Baruch Hu didn't let me get there. I did my share of what was right. It didn't make any difference whether I got there or not because I wanted to go and I made my plans to go and that was what Hashem wanted me at the time. Here you go. You know what I'm saying? Who said you didn't get there? Asma. Who says you have to get there in Olam Hazeh? In Olam Haba, you're there. Olam Hazeh, Hashem wanted you in Pittsburgh. Don't ask me why, with the Steelers, you know. So.
That's very interesting, if I might point. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that if not here, then in Olam Haba, then eventually it's going to be Malikinus.
Right.
Eventually.
Yeah, eventually, yeah, Malikinus. So, I always say, you know, I always say, I always think of this, you know, of what is it, Shimon Ben, what is it, Nosani or whatever, the Et man, you know, the Et Yeshiva, the Et Yeshiva, that he was, he spent his whole life darshaning Ets in the Torah. He had the, every time he said Et, it's coming to a new halach, coming to include something that, you know, is there. So he got his whole life, he had a whole yeshiva, everybody worked every day darshaning etz, you know, that was that. Go to, everybody knows that you go to that yeshiva like you're working on etz all day, you know. L'rabos ma, what's this coming to include? It's a lot of work. And he gets to one place in the Chumash where it writes, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, you should fear Hashem. And according to his theory, et is coming to tell you that there's something in this world that you should fear like Hashem that's not written down. And he gets to this, and he thinks about this, and he says, you know, there's nothing in this world that can be included to that you should fear like Hashem. It can't be. So he said, Shema Minor, I'm wrong. You just, it wasn't made to darshan. And here he is working 10 years on this thing. So he calls all of the students in, and he said, I'm sorry, I'm closing yeshiva, and I want you to know, everything we did in the last 10 years was wrong. I'm finished. I'm closing yeshiva. The doors are closing, you know. Want to learn Daf Yomi here? Go ahead. It's the end. It's the end of the Etz. I'm not going to do it. So they said, you know, Rebbe, how can you do it? So he has this famous statement. Kshem shekibalti schar ala drisha ken kibalti schar ala prisha. Just as I receive reward from darshaning, so I receive reward from staffing. It's better in Hebrew because it rhymes. But, you know, you get the idea. You know, so I always ask on this question, on this Gemara, you know, it struck me when I first read it. Who's to say that he got schar ala drisha? He was wrong. I mean, he just wasted his time. What does he mean? I mean, Etz aren't supposed to be darshan. Why does he say I got schar al drisha from? What's the pshat? Why is it? Got the wrong pshat all along. He never got the right pshat on the sugya.
Tam chavrusa. When you make mistakes,
he says you get reward. I mean, it's a chiddush. You're learning to know emes if you make a mistake. So then you haven't learning. You have to learn to find out the pshat halacha if you make a mistake. Who says it's learning? Who says you get reward for it? Darshaning something that was never meant to be darshaning. Hashem wants me. It's good. So the answer is, like you said, the answer is that yeah, you get schar for the process of learning, whether you're right or whether you're wrong. You know, you wanted to learn. Your kavana was l'shamayim to darshan. So you've learned Torah. What about the end? In the end, you were wrong. It doesn't make any difference. Now you can't say that in physics. You know, if a person wants to get a certain theorem and in the end he's wrong, so there was no value to anything that he did. He was wrong, you know, but it's not like that in Avodas Hashem, and it's like that for everything. Person, even if you're wrong, you're right, because Hashem wants us to use our mind to do what we can. So that's what he's saying. Echad amamim, echad amamim. Just want to talk about this Gemara. As long as he has pointed, you said you've decided, you put your heart towards heaven, so you live. So all of what you don't have to cry. That's all of Hazeh. I understand you. You didn't accomplish. You didn't thought you were, you know, all right. You did what you could. Everybody knows when you get old, you realize that this is the main nechama of a person. In the end, what do you fall back on when you didn't do this and this didn't work out? You fall back on, I was trying to do a Avodas Hashem in my life, what I was doing. And on that I take pride, and on that I continue. That's all you have to fall back on, Olam Hazeh. But that's a lot to fall back on, because that means that you're a tzaddik, and Olam Havoy, you're going to be up there with right tzaddikim, because in our lifetime we've tried to be Oved Hashem with what we could, you know. It's a nechama for a person. So Rav Elazar says to him, however, I'm not crying about that. He says, that's not what I'm crying about. So Rav Yochanan says to him, you know, he's trying to, you know, sometimes you ever speak to a depressed person, what's the matter? I don't know. You know, that's like, you know, I would say, you know, that's like, I think that's every, like, therapist's nightmare, you know what I mean? You get this person, you know, what's the matter? I'm like, nothing. Yeah. What are you here for? I don't know. Yeah. What, you know, it's like, what do I do now? You know what I mean? Like, if somebody starts talking, I have a problem, okay, well, just don't, you know. That's like, maybe it's this, you know, maybe it's that. Guesswork. Anyway, so he says, maybe it's because you're crying because of your poverty. Now, Rav Elazar was very poor. We can imagine that. This is my own show, but maybe he didn't have enough money even to light, you know, the shaman and oil to put in the air. Now, who knows? He was very poor. He says, maybe you're crying because you're so poor. Now, here also, you have to explain, like, here's Rav Elazar, this tzaddik. Why would he be crying because he was poor? Like, what's the idea over here? Rav Yochanan thought he was crying because he was poor. So, the simple pshat, I think, is that it's just extremely difficult to be poor. Even if you're Rav Elazar, poverty is an extreme design in life. It's extremely difficult, you know. Gemara says in Ervin that, you know, Dikduke Aeneas, you know, rings to Apikorsis. You have to go, you know, these people who, you know, travel to the other side of the city, they'll walk their own money to take a bus, you know, they'll walk to Machane Yehuda, you know, in order, because you can, so you can get tomatoes for, you know, on Wednesday, on whatever, on Monday nights before they clear out the thing, you get tomatoes for a few, you know, half a shekel less, a kilo, you know. It's not poshut, you know, live a life like that. It's poshut. It's tremendous in the sign. And it's difficult. It's poshut kasha ma'od. Aeneas is extremely difficult. The sign, as we all know here. And not only that, but there's another thing here as well, perhaps deeper, that we'll see that when a person is poor, it limits you. You know, we're used to olam hazeh, whereby the people who have money, money is power. If you have money in this world, you can affect things in this world. You can do things. You can start yeshivas. You know, if you don't have money, and what we have to learn from money, you know, what can you do? You know, how much time you have to spend getting it? You know, Rabbi Fabian, Rabbi Schwartz, you know, they're still both in boots lines, you know, again, schlepping across the world, you know, to get enough money, you know, how many times a year in order to keep a small yeshiva going. It's incredible. That's called exile. Because the people who have money, yeah, they're in power. They don't have any concept of tzidkus and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know. The people who have no, you know, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, know what life should be for, they don't have any resources to actually do anything about it in the world. Zero, you know. And as a result, money is used for cable TV and for all sorts of things, you know. And, you know, for money to uplift a human being, it's not allocated, but money that would change humanity, you know. So nobody cares about it. That's exile. So I'm saying it's worthwhile why a person would cry over being poor, besides the fact that practically and personally it's difficult. But, you know, he probably had, he probably wanted to have a yeshiva that he wanted to start, you know. And he didn't have the money to get it going. He didn't have the money to do this. Who knows? You know, maybe someone, what are you going to ask?
No, I was going to say, well, so why is Hashem's purpose in having it like that, you know?
Oh. Who knows? Because it has some purposes. Thing, you know, that's, we call that exile. It's galus. That's what galus means. I said, you know, Rebbe Elazar ben Pedas. I would see about Rebbe Elazar ben Pedas. He was so poor that one day he had bloodletting, and you know, and he came back to his house, and after a bloodletting, you know, bloodletting he used to think was good for the heart and all sorts of other things. He used to say for health, you should have somebody let your blood every month. They did that for years. They somebody said, I just reading, it's coming back. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they say, so once he went to bloodletting, and you're supposed to eat a meal after you have bloodletting. And if you don't, you can fall into a bull moose. You know what a bull moose is?
No, what's that?
A bull moose. No, a bull moose. Yeah, I think it's related to the word bulimia. Bull moose. I really think it is. It's probably a Latin word.
What does that mean?
Bulimia is a, you know, you don't teach girls, so you don't know about eating disorders. Yeah, anybody teach girls today has to know about eating disorders. Yeah,
diet.
It's more than diet. They have anorexia has like 12% mortality rate. Yeah, it's serious stuff. Yeah, and there are a lot. You know, every year we have a couple of people in the school of anorexia. It's extremely common now. The number of eating disorders in people among women is like, you know, it's extremely high. And some people rate it, you know. What's that?
Bulimia is so much worse.
And bulimia is that people they go on binges. And they eat and they vomit and everything. It's like all sorts of problems. Anyway, so he fell into a bulmus, which means that he felt ravenous that he had to eat this way. And he went to his house and there was nothing to eat except garlic, big clove of garlic that he had. He was so poor, he had nothing to eat. So he grabbed the garlic and he shoved it down his throat. Yeah, and it was so hot he fainted on the floor. Sage, Elizabeth, that's, maybe it was the same person. Could even say it was, right? But it was the same person. I never thought of that. It's not always good. The next time I say this, I'm going to remember this. It's Rav Elazar ben Pedas. It's probably the same person. So he's lying there. He's lying there unconscious on the floor. And his Talmidim come in, you know, to have their shear or something like that. And there's their Rebbe, you know. And he's lying there unconscious, but apparently had a dream. And then all of a sudden, first they see that he's laughs, and then he cries, and then they see sparks flying out of his head. Alright, it's a really interesting word. Then he wakes up and he comes to. So he said, Rebbe, what happened? So he said, I know, first he cries, then he laughs, and there's these sparks. He says, what happened, Rebbe? So he goes, I was unconscious, and all of a sudden I found myself speaking to Hashem. And I said to Hashem, Hashem, how long am I going to be this poor? How long can I be so poor? Can't take it anymore. So Hashem said, if you like, I could destroy the entire world and create it again. And then there's a suffix that maybe you'll be born with more money and you'll have more money in your life. That's what he said. If I destroy the whole world and create it again out of a suffix, yeah, maybe you'll have a mazel that you'll have more money, maybe, if you like. Yeah, which means the answer to your question is a certain mazel in certain people's life. So he said to him, which is greater, the years that I've lived or the years that I've yet to live? So he said, yeah, the years that you've already lived, which means his life is more than half over. So he said, Hashem, show me the reward of tzedikim the olam haba, you know. So Hashem shows him already, you know, he's turning his life, his idea. So Hashem shows him Yud Gimel Naharos, 13 rivers of Sheva Nefarsimon. Sheva Nefarsimon is to make by En Gedi, and believe it or not, in that little archaeological town there by Ein Gedi, that used to be one of the most wealthiest communities in Eretz Israel, because they made the Shemen of Arsimon, and it was, they were the only ones who knew how to make it, and a little flask of it cost $1,000, and kings used to make it, and it was like famous all over the world, Shemen of Arsimon. They made it mamish by Ein Gedi there. That's what happened until Goyim came and destroyed the city because they got jealous of them. They were fabulously wealthy people down there. So it's a little tiny flask. It was like you smell it, it's like olam haba, you know, the sense of reyach is already a marshal to ruchni, so olam haba, unfortunately it's the only reyach, it wasn't only sent, it wasn't destroyed. It wasn't. Anyway, so he sows him 13 rivers of Shemin Farsimon. That's like something incredible. So he sees Hashem, so he says to Hashem, because Kodesh Baruch Hu, he says, why only 13? Why can't I have more? You see from here that a person, when it comes to ruchni, it's just never be satisfied with a little. You know, Hashem, why only 13? Why want more? So Hashem says, I need some left over for other tzaddikim as well, Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar says to him, Hashem, you're limited in how much you can give. You can give me more and give them more as well. To which Hashem said to Rav Elazar, Rav Elazar says, started snapping his fingers in front of his forehead, tapping his forehead. He said, Rav Elazar, I tap you with my arrows. There were the sparks flying out of his head. He's very happy with him for asking that question. Ah, Shmack, Rav Elazar, that's what I'm waiting for. What a question. Baruch Hashem, he was testing him. You know, I could hold the canker. You could do as much as you want, Hashem. You could give me more. You know, that's exactly what he's waiting for. That's how a person should be. Give me more, Ruchli. Why can't you give me more? Ah, he's very happy with it. Anyway, that's Rav Elazar does. That's the person here, Rav Elazar, I think. So he said to him, maybe you're crying because of your poverty. It's a portion. So he says, if you're crying because of your poverty, he said, you should know, in exile, no person is zocha anymore to shtei shulchanos, to two tables. You're not zocha. Lo kol adam zocha l'shtei shulchanot. So the last person in this world who was zocha to shtei shulchanot, two tables, Reb Yehuda Nasi. He was great in Ruchnias, and he was great in Gashmias. He was the greatest, richest person, the most powerful person in Eretz Israel. He was a multi-millionaire, billionaire, you know, million isn't so much these days anymore. You know, and besides that, he used to have lettuce on his table all year round. Can you imagine such a thing? Lettuce all year round! Imagine such luxury. And you're not into it, right? Lettuce all year round? Okay, there you go. And so what happened was is that Rav Elazar, the thing he had to say, and besides that, he was also extremely he was also extremely He wrote the Mishnah. He was a great Talmud Chacham. So he said to him, listen, not every person is Zohar to Shtei Shulchanos. You think that people are Zohar to Shtei Shulchanos. Not every person is Zohar to Shtei Shulchanos. You can't do it. Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Vital Tari here, I'm sorry. He came to have a Seder. And then he had to, you know, he felt bad because two people were here. And then he had to, you know, pass it. And then he lost his whole morning Seder. Now he's trying to go to find another base member. He can't. I was just joking with you. Have a good Shabbos. A good Shabbos. Okay. So he said, he says, we're not Zoch to Shtei Shulchanos anymore. In Olam Hazeh, you know, in exile, it's not like that anymore. It just doesn't exist in this world. That you were great in Ruchnias, you had to expect that you should be wealthy, and it just doesn't exist in exile. That's what exile is all about. You know, the fact that you're great with Shulchan Echad, that already is what you could expect to achieve anymore. I mean, that's it. You know. So, Rabbi, it's not what I'm crying about. I'm not upset about it. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, no, what are you crying about? Says, maybe you're crying because you had a child that died. And that's a tremendous tragedy. Rabbi Yochanan had a son, apparently, that died in his lifetime. And that's, you know, incredible tragedy for a person to lose a child, you know, in his lifetime. It's one of the most difficult things, you know. It's much worse losing a child than losing a parent, you know. It's a terrible thing to experience. It's enough to break a person to cry over. So Rabbi Yochanan said, if that's what you're crying about, so then Rabbi Yochanan, you know, took out his famous necklace. Rabbi Yochanan had a necklace with a tooth on it for one of his children. Rabbi Yochanan had 10 children that died in his lifetime. He had an incredibly difficult life. You know, the Chiddush HaYomim was like that also. Chiddush HaYomim had, I think, 10 or 12, 11 children that died in his lifetime. Great to see. And in this, you know, Yisurim. And it says, you know, each one was, who knows what the children of Rabbi Yochanan were like, you know. And when the 10th one died, so Rabbi Yochanan took a tooth that he found that was Pachas Mis Kadasha, so it wasn't Makabal Tumah. And he put it on a chain, and he used to carry it around with him to comfort other people who lost children. And when he would go in and see them, so he would see them lying down, you know, and broken, and he would say, listen, you've lost one child, you know, I've lost 10 children, I've continued, I've grown, and, you know, I've survived, and Rabbi Yochanan, you know, people would look and they would feel like I can go further, you know, what have I suffered compared to Rabbi Yochanan, the great tzaddik, you know? And you can't say, you know, I've been punished for my averus. I'm Rabbi Yochanan himself. And look how he's continued, you know. I can do it also. I say it's sort of superhuman personality, Rabbi Yochanan, that he loses his 10 children. And when the 10th child goes, not only is he not broken by it, but he starts thinking how he could use the experience to comfort other people. It's an incredible strength of character, Yochanan. So he said, if that's what you're crying about, look, you know, I've lost 10 children, I've continued. So Belazar looks up and he says, I'm not crying about that either. So Rilgan said, what are you crying about? So Belazar says, because you think I'm crying for myself. I'm not crying for myself, he says, I'm crying for you. Because of you that I'm crying. Rilgan says, for me? He goes, yes, for you. For look, you come in and you light up the room, you know. It's such light. It's such beauty. And one day you're going to die. And the beauty is going to leave this world and we're going to be left mamish in the dark. With anybody to light us up, you know. What's going to happen to us then? You know? Hi, Bali. Yeah, the Bala Ba'afra says, the high shufra, the boli ba'afra, for your beauty that in the end is going to be in the dust. I think I'm going to be left mamish in the dark without your beauty to light up the world. Unfortunately, we say that Rabbi Yochanan, somebody saw Rabbi Yochanan, he was like the last of the people who lived in Yerushalayim with a certain beauty to them. Shapira the Yerushalayim. And when he's gone, it's like the end of the kesher to the world of the Beis HaMikdash. Mamash, without tzaddikim, it's no shechina in the world. It's a different world. So that's what he says. I'm crying for the loss of your beauty. That's what I'm crying. Rabbi Yochanan says to him, on that you're crying? He said, that's a good reason to cry. And the Gemara says that the two of them sat down and they both cried together. They both sat down and cried together. Loss of Shechina comes. Loss of tzaddikim.
So is it his literal beauty, or is it
his beauty? His beauty that lit up the room.
What effect should his like physical beauty have on the world? I don't really get what
we explained. His physical beauty isn't physical beauty. His beauty, physical beauty, doesn't light up the room. You know, it's a beauty of a human being. Like you see the soul of the human being shining out through his face. And that's a beauty that connects you to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. All beauty, in the sense, real beauty, connects you to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. If you see true beauty, I'm not talking about beauty of movie stars. You know, we call that taiva. It's not beauty. It's desire. We're talking about somebody who attracts you. We're talking about real beauty. Every time you see something really beautiful, it's a potential that it's makasha you to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It says in the Chumash, but the Ganavi, Ganim, says it was Kodesh Baruch Hu planted trees. Nechman the Marev, Tov l'Maichal, beautiful to look at, good to eat. The Rav Hirsch asks there, why does it say beautiful to look at and good to eat? It should say good to eat first. What's more important? So he writes, you see from there, that beauty for the purpose of Ganim, the main purpose was the beauty of the place, because the beauty of the Makom gave a person to Vegas and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So he writes, see the power of beauty to connect a person to Hashem. That's what the very perception of beauty is, actually a spiritual perception. So we just don't know what beauty is, but it's almost like that. And it connects a person to Hashem. So when that beauty is lost, you're left, you know, you're left without Hashem's revealed in this world. It's a tragedy. On that tragedy, you can cry. So after the two of them sit down and cry together, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Elazar, Amar Lei, Chavivin Alecha Yisurin. He said, Rabbi Elazar, are you happy with your suffering? I mean, here he is suffering away. Are you happy with your suffering? You're happy. So Rabbi Elazar says to him, Lo Hein Velo Scharon. He says, I don't want them, and I don't want my reward. Meaning that I'm 100% convinced that what's happening to me in this world is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's meant and can be used for my spiritual development. I'm 100% convinced that of that. I'm not saying, you know, why me? But nevertheless, I want out. I don't feel like I can't use them properly. And as a result, lo hein velo scharon. I don't want my suffering, and I don't want their reward. It's too much for me. I don't want it. Rabbi Yochanan says, give me your hand. And Rabbi Elazar lifts up, says his left hand, and when going right, Yochanan takes his right hand, he grabs onto him, he pulls him up out of bed, and he heals him. And he's out of bed, he's finished. Now, you know, it was almost over over here, but that's a good way of Bikur Cholim, you know. Third part of Bikur Cholim is that you just heal the person while they're there, you know. So before you want to know, like, what did he do over here? You know, so you could answer the question, why was it Rabbi Yochanan was, you know, the miraculous healing. People like what they say, Abu Chasera could do these types of things. No reason why Rabbi Yochanan couldn't do it either. However, of course, we say a little bit deeper than things like that also. I mean, it's less deep than that. They say that it's an image for tefillah over here. That Rabbi Yochanan pulled him out with tefillah. And the third thing that we're supposed to do when we visit the sick, the third thing we're supposed to do is we're supposed to daven for the person we visit. That's one of the ikar chiyuvim or bikur cholim, is to daven for someone when you go visit them. And the tefillahs that we daven there are considered to be very powerful. As a matter of fact, the Mefarshim tell us that the Shechina is with someone who's sick. And when you daven by a person who's sick, your tefillahs go right to Hashem. It's like you're at the kosel. It's like the Shechina is there in front of you. And as a result, the prayers that you say are very powerful. That's why you can't say, well, daven for him at home. Besides the fact that, you know, you go to Shvetan Sikh, and we'll see there's another reason for it as well, I'll speak in a minute. But the tefillahs are there, are very powerful. And therefore, yeah, there's the mitzvah, literally, when you go visit someone who's sick, there's a mitzvah davening for them. Sometimes it's better not to do it in front of them, because, you know, a person's lying there sick, and then you say, what's your father's name, you know, what's your name, you know, Elozer ben Sarah, and you should have a fourth slave, and then go, I'm going to die, what do you mean? You know, he gets all excited and doubting me, scare the person, so you have to be, you know, careful. But nevertheless, that's big, that's part of the halacha, that's part of the mitzvah. You daven for them. So it says you should daven outside the room, whatever, you should daven for them when they're there. And Rabbi Yochanan was able to pull him out of his illness with his tefillahs there. That already is possible. Now they ask, if it's talking about that, so what's the idea here? What's the idea that he had to grab onto him? What do you have to grab onto him for? Give me your hand. So, I think the simple shot on this is that it's one thing to daven for a person, but if you want to affect somebody really with your tefillahs, one of the main ways that you can affect them, you have to make a kesher to the person. If you can grab onto that person and make a kesher to them, so then your tefillahs can help them. You have to grab onto them, you know. And if you don't grab onto them, and you can't reach out to them and really make a kesher with them, so then your tefillahs aren't going to affect them in the same way. You have to care about them. You have to, you know, that's a simple shine. But it's extremely important. That's why another reason why you have to go to the sick person's bed to daven for them. Because if you're just in your house, you don't makasha yourself to that person enough. You don't care about what's happening to them. You're not invested in them. You don't see how the person's suffering. As a result, you don't have the cash, so your tefillahs don't help. As well as the Mefarshim say over here, they ask why daven the left hand to the right hand, and they say that the left hand has to do with midas hadin always. And often when a person is sick, Kadosh Baruch Hu is treating him with midas hadin. That's what life and sickness is all about. And it's very difficult when you're being treated with midas hadin to get out of it. It's like being in the hospital. It's hard to eat birchas hagoyim. It's not so easy. But a person who's not sick, somebody like Yochanan over here, so he's not sick. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu is treating him with chesed at this point in time, not again. There's an idea here that if you connect yourself to another person, you grab onto him and make a kesher with him, grab onto him. So then, yeah, once you makasha yourself to that person, you can change the way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu deals with that person. Because he's dealing with you with chesed, you're not out sick. And now you grab onto that person, you care about him, you make a kesher with him, so now Kadosh Baruch Hu will deal with him with chesed also. Because since you've connected to him, so how he's dealing with you, he'll deal with him. So by making ksharim to other people, making a kesher to them, you have the ability to help them and change them, and heal them. Not just from davening, but the very kesher itself can be a powerful way to actually change their matzah, help them out, you know. So, situations in life. The only thing that I left is to say that the only thing is that the person themselves has to make an effort as well. Grab on to me, you know, give me your hand. Sometimes in life, you know, you're in situations in life where you can only get better through other people. Ein chovesh, you know. You base hasurim, and, you know, as a result, you know, you have to reach out to people. You reach out. Get him to reach out, or he has to reach out. You grab onto him, so that you could change his whole hanhaga. Anyway, so he's doing it, and so we see that sometimes in life, a person, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us that ability. Lo hein v'lo scharon. All our Gemara's here about suffering, how important they are, and what they can do, and all of my boy. Nevertheless, in life, we have that choice, and as a result, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu sometimes gives us a choice to say such a thing. And that's sort of a little bit on the mitzvahs of Bikur Choli, of Yochanan. Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos.